You are tuned to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to this brand new, freshly minted edition of Technology Bites, 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Yes, freshly minted, hot off the presses.
Minty fresh.
Yeah, I could use breath mint, probably.
You're telling me, pal.
All right, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I just came online. I'm flicked.
Give him a chance. No. Yes?
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicked.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he...
Groovehouse.
Yes. All right. Welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. I'm still struggling to get used to the fact that the sun is out when I get here.
It's nice, kind of.
It's a nice day outside.
Nice,
I mean, it's actually the sun.
Walk.
Very nice.
The sun is actually out, and the weather is very nice. But it's you know, you're driving into the radio station from deep in suburbia, and the light is shining down on the freeway. It's not right.
It was gorgeous in Minute Maid Park. I wish there was a ball game there. It was just gorgeous.
You had a ball game there.
Kind of.
That's right. We have an award winner with us.
Yeah, we had the Chronicle had our internal awards ceremony tonight, and I was a winner. Yay! So, but what was really nice, they had it on Minute Maid Park. We came into the Diamond Club, which is behind home plate.
The old press box.
Yeah, we sat down there in the seats behind home plate, and we had a Sonny Terry band played. And Sonny Boy Terry. And we had Rena Couture gave a nice little inspirational speech, and we got our award.
You had the actual announcer? The Astros announcer?
We had the Astros announcer announce the names of the winners.
That's pretty close. They called you out.
Yes, and they had the Jumbotron on, and so I got to go up there, and I was on the Jumbotron.
So, but you didn't rent a limousine and go down to a hotel room in Galveston for the night to party?
No, but I am going to Disneyland.
You should sneak back in and run
is
the
bases. Is that what you said after you won?
They wouldn't let us on the grass. Yeah, they said, whatever you do, don't go on the grass. Mm-mm.
The Chronicle couldn't pay for the grass right walking privilege.
No.
That's extra. You know, we're gonna pull
this
back.
This is the
on
newspaper
this.
Industry.
It sounds a little extravagant for a struggling industry to be having a party at Minute Maid Park.
There were probably some trades going on.
They'll be running some very favorable articles later.
Oh, that pop-up got a little bigger, didn't it? Wow, they've combined the Kron Star and the Astro Star now becoming kind of
That's not a bad idea.
The Kronstros.
The Kronstros.
Kronstros.
All right, well, we're glad you could tune in. You know, Dwight, congratulations on being recognized for having such a good time at work.
It was like
your best use of social media, right?
Right.
That was what you got it for.
Yeah, so I guess I got it for tweeting. Yeah.
Anyone else would be fired for that at work. That's awesome.
I know. So does it get you anything else at work to get us favorable parking space, extra Wi-Fi?
No, I just have to. I just know that, you know, I actually have a new job in theory. I mean, I'm kind of like the social media person. I'm not trying to like make the Chronicle much more social media savvy, and so that's kind of my charge this year. And so this is a good way to kick it off.
Awesome.
Nice.
All right. Well, visit us online, geekradio.com or facebook.com/geekradio. That's our web presence. You can also hang out with us at IRC. We're in, the channel is called Tech Bytes. I always look afflicted when I say that because I want to say Pound Tech Bytes so bad, but I've been kind of clued in that that's not good. So
it's hashtag Tech Bytes, right?
Hashtag Tech Bytes. That's even better. Yeah, so the IRC, it's the show within a show. We're hanging out there on irc.cuckoo.com. If you don't know how to use an IRC client or just don't really feel like learning, woo! You can use the webpage to do it. We have an IRC client right there on the internets, and you can use that to join into the IRC channel and hang out with, good Lord, there's a lot of people in the IRC. Yay. All right. And the phone number, 713-526-5738. If you want to call and be on the air, we will be taking calls from our listeners. That would be you and people like you hanging out. But first, we're going to go to San Antonio and do the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So have you ever wondered how much the internet is kind of worth in the economy? I mean, I know how much, you know, people think about how much it's worth to them individually, but what if you had to go to a sort of a dollar figure? Apparently, thanks to the Boston Consulting Group, you won't have to wonder anymore. It is estimated that the internet contributes a cool $684 billion to the U.S. gross domestic product. That's roughly 4.7% of U.S. GDP. The same amount as its effect on Japan's economy, but less than the 5.5%, 7.3%, and 8.3% clocked in by China, South Korea, and the UK, respectively. So apparently they're much more internet-y in their economy in the UK. Per the report, the internet is just getting started, with future growth expected to hit 8% on average by 2016 for developed countries and well north of 20% in booming economies like Argentina and India. I guess online porn knows how to contribute to the world economy. speaking of on an economy wide felt impact, the iPad, you know, went on sale last Friday, which it seems like longer since it came out to me for some reason. I didn't get one, you know, I mean, I didn't go get a new one. which, so we'll do an aside there, you know, who's the Apple fanboy now? I believe a certain, some of the hosts of Technology Bytes who were not widely associated with Apple products in the past already have the new iPad, and they had the previous gen one too. Anyways, no, Apple sold 3 million new iPads since Friday. It makes it the, quote, strongest iPad launch yet, according to Apple VP of Marketing Phil Schiller. You know the details about, you know, better display and all those kinds of things. One of the things that's interesting is it does, as far as I've seen and heard even lately, you still can go to the store and find models. I don't know if everything is there or if you have to, you know, be careful on what models you get. But it does not sound like there's the kind of, like, where, you know, like the iPad 2, there was a period of time where basically there was just, there were none. You couldn't get one. Worse on the iPad 1. So perhaps Apple has finally kind of gotten it to where they have enough capacity that that they don't get totally blanked when the thing goes on sale. But what else goes with a new iPad on sale or new Apple device? Well, first, there's the, I need to write it down so I can put my name on it or something. You know, there's like the thing about the stages of illness, whether, you know, denial, like anger, acceptance, bargaining, whatever. On an Apple product, especially a new one, there's like, I don't know, hype, super hype, keynote address, and then there's blowback, and then there's the complaints. And so the new iPad has some people who are not happy. They feel like it's hotter than its predecessor. According to, you know, different places have evaluated it. According to tweakers.net, they used a thermal imager and said that it's about 10 degrees warmer on the lower left-hand side of the new iPad than the iPad 2. People were talking about it, saying that the third-gen iPad was running hotter than its predecessor during normal use. They ran their own tests. Despite this discovery, however, that it's that much hotter, Apple maintains that everything in the iPad 3 is operating as expected and instructs customers to contact Apple with concerns. You know, the processor is a much bigger, much larger, and doing a lot more in the new one, so it's not exactly that much of a shocker that it's warm. And so it's running at about, they said it's running at about 92 degrees on the, on the higher end of what tweaker.net found when they measured it. You know, 92 degrees isn't enough to hurt your hand, but you can feel it. You can tell that it's warm. There are some places I've seen who claim that Consumer Reports, which didn't recommend the iPhone at first and has decided not to recommend the new iPad, so I'm sure that will be big sales failures. No, they claim to have measured an iPad running at 116 degrees while playing Infinity Blade 2. Maybe it's a feature. Maybe it's some kind of heat weapon. No, anyway, so there's that complaint. But wait, we've got to have another one. This one's got, you know, I mean, you've got wireless stuff involved with it. It's not a phone, but what else would be a thing to complain about to make your own antenna gate out of? Apparently, there are people who feel, and I don't know. I mean, I don't want to, you know, so I was sort of making fun about the complaining thing. I don't know if this is, you know, obviously we'll have to watch to see how this one goes. But they say that the Wi-Fi reception seems to be weaker on the new iPad than it was on the iPad 2, the iPhone, or on MacBooks. This is according to numerous reports on AppleCare's support thread. Somebody, you know, basically it started innocently enough. Somebody said they're in a hotel with their laptop and new iPad 3. The laptop Wi-Fi reception is as strong as it gets, but the iPad only registers a weak signal. Anyone else having similar problems? And then it started to fill up. So then 63 replies were in the thread. That's not proof that there's something going on, but And it's not clear, is this something that's widespread through the widespread through the devices, or if it's just some of the devices or not. But you know, perhaps if you're having an experience with it with your Wi-Fi, you can tell, you know, you can tell us how yours is doing. And maybe if it's getting hot while it's doing it. And then power, you know, for tablets, obviously one of the key things is kind of your battery life. This one's sort of been all over the place, but I wanted to definitely mention it. A team from Purdue University was looking at the power usage on apps on various tablets, whether, you know, iOS, Android, etc. They found that nearly three quarters of the power used when you run an app like Angry Birds is used for the advertisements. It developed eProf, an app that investigates what processes are draining from your battery, loading it onto the very old school Android powered MyTouch 3G and Nexus One, not to mention an HTC Titan, TYTN 2, running Windows Mobile 6.5. Drilling down into those Angry Birds figures, the game itself only consumes 18% of the power, while advertising platform Flurry has 45%, and GPS location tracking a further 15%. That's for the one app. Project leader Abhinav Patak lays the blame at the feet of poorly coded apps that need to be made significantly more efficient. He's now working with Microsoft to bring his software to Windows Phone and will present his finding at the EuroSys conference in Bern next month. If you don't think you'll be able to give up free apps, just remember to shut down GPS before you start smashing the pigs. So there's a key. If you want to extend your battery life, a couple things. It looks like pay for some of the apps. You know, if you find yourself saying, man, I would pay $5 to have another 20 minutes of battery life right now, then maybe you should spend that $5 on the app to buy the real version of the app that you've been playing for free for, you know, the past 3 months that is apparently draining your battery instead of, you know, being totally free. So, you know, there really is no such thing as a free lunch. Finally, a new equipment. This one's sort of fascinating. I mean, when you think back, I mean, I remember when I bought like a 30 meg hard drive or a 40 meg hard drive, and then you got into where they were hundreds of megs. Oh my gosh! And then, you know, it went up to where eventually you had 1,000 megabytes, and so there you've got a gig, 1 gig drive. Well, now we're hitting this seems to be happening faster. You know, maybe it's just me. Seagate today is talking up the fact that it has managed to cram 1 terabit, that's 1 trillion bits, onto a square inch of a hard drive. The super dense storage comes thanks to heat-assisted magnetic recording, HAMR, H-A-M-R. Ooh, that's kind of cool. There's a Butch technology. A successor to the perpendicular magnetic recording that's currently in hard drives. The manufacturer sees the technology hitting the market later this decade, so I guess that'll be a little while, doubling the storage capacity of today's hard drives in its wake. Just how many bits are we talking about? Seagate says that a good way to think about the number of bits, the bits in 1 square inch of disk space at the new milestone, far outnumbers the stars in the Milky Way, which astronomers put between 200 and 400 billion. That's a heck of a lot of bits. That's a bunch of bits. A terabit, maybe. Yeah, anyways, 1 trillion bits. And so that's probably your future. You know, you start... The thing that I wonder when I see this is, at what point do they build a hard drive that's so big that even the most intense user with the biggest needs, you know, doing high def video and all of that, can't really fill it up with their, you know, pirated music and their videos and their raw photos, etc. I guess if they keep going at the rate they are, we'll find out pretty soon, or at least within the next decade. And that's the news.
All right. So I had my headphones off when I was getting called out as a fanboy, and I just got...
I got
tipped off when I saw the hosts in the control room laughing and pointing. But yes, it's true. I said I was going all in, and I'm all in. I've got the latest. I don't have the iPhone yet, but that's coming with the next iPhone.
I think that probably you're a fanboy with a Y. You haven't reached the fanboy with an I yet, which is that's like the high level.
I don't want to get there.
I just view it as protection for me, because you kind of go, you know, now no longer can I be accused of being the Apple fanboy if I don't even have as advanced a stuff as say Jay does.
But yeah, but you're still
yeah.
I'm not going to argue with that.
Are you going to keep up with Windows, I guess, via stuff at work, or how are you going to keep grounded with, you know, the world of stuff that doesn't really work right?
I have a Windows desktop at work, and. Are you okay in there?
Yeah, okay. That was good.
Yeah, I have a Windows.
I thought Barrett's wording of that question was very nice and slipped by a lot of people, I think.
So Pete, am I a Mac fan? I have an iPad 3. Am I a Mac fanboy?
Well, think about your job, though, involves reviewing all this stuff. And so what phones do you have right now? What operating system phones do you have going right now?
Going right now?
Yeah.
Just my iPhone.
Just
I have
iPhone?
An Android phone, just for the record, right now.
At home, I have a Windows phone and an Android phone at home.
So, I mean, you kind of have to cover all the bases. And yeah, I know you went and spent your money on it, or some of these other ones are you know, reviewer copies that you get to, that they send you. But it is kind of part of your living to, you know, you couldn't exactly just not do anything with something on the level of the new iPad.
But I prefer it, given the chance, I will buy Macs. But one of the reasons I use them is because I can run Windows on them too. You can't do that on the flip side. If you have a PC, you can't legally run the Mac OS on it. So.
Well, to me,
other than actually, you can run Mac server. You can run the server OS. I think server 10.6 or can be run. That is actually the license leaves that open where you can.
Well, to me,
you can virtualize one of them. Sorry,
that's all right. To be completely fair, I mean, yes, okay, I am converting. I like the Mac, but I will say this: at my company, there is an ever-growing Mac deployment between iPhones, iPads, and MacBooks. My VP of the finance department has just converted all of his computers to the Mac. He's gone in. He's full-on fanboy. loves the Mac. Has returned his company Windows laptop and is now using a MacBook Air as his principal computing device. And part of that is because he really enjoys the platform, and another part of that is because he knows that he's got me there to be able to support this and make it work. And there are other people, the company I work for, without going into too many details, does own one of the major brandings of Linux. So we have a large Unix deployment, as well as a number of those people that use the Mac for its interoperability with the Unix systems. And we have a lot of software developers that are developing stuff for the Mac. So when somebody calls the help desk, if you call tech support for just about any company, unless it's Apple, and say, well, I'm trying to get on the internet with a Mac, or I'm trying to do this with a Mac, then everybody just kind of says, well, we don't support that. And for me, one of the biggest drives to get involved in it in the first place was I just wanted to learn it and be able to understand it and then be able to support it. But yes, I've become a fan. I enjoy.
There is a rumor that at Microsoft, that the marketing group has been prohibited from buying iPads and iPhones and using them at work.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I will say, too, that, you know, it has a lot to do with getting on in years and wanting to have stuff that just works and does what it's supposed to. And also actually being able, you know, now that I'm, you know, gainfully employed and in my senior years here with no children, being able to use that discretionary income to buy something cool and something neat. You know, I'm sorry, right now, Windows computer, maybe Windows 8, I am actually getting interested in Windows 8, but, you know, buying a new computer with Windows 7 on it, just, it's really a tool. I mean, it's so much a tool, and if it, you know, when it works, that it's not even exciting to use. I mean, if I was really sincere about the idea that I just want stuff that works, and I want to, I mean, I could definitely buy a Windows 7 mm-hmm. computer and have that be true. There's a certain joy in playing with tech that's innovative and flashy and has a, you know, this kind of this look and feel, this user experience, and I'm enjoying that.
I'm just terribly conflicted with Windows 8. There are times when I use it. I've got it both on some virtual machines as well as it's on my home built Windows PC at home. I just went ahead and installed it, and that's what I'm using. And I just am terribly conflicted because going back and forth between the Metro UI, which is interesting, and very similar to Windows Phone, which I like, and then going back and forth to the desktop and the way it jumps back and forth, I keep waiting for it to go, okay, that's cool, that's useful, but every time it's kind of like, I kind of don't want to jump like that, you know? It's very jarring to me to go back and forth, and I really want to see what developers do with the Metro UI apps, but for right now, it just feels like something gets grafted on.
Do you think that with the Retina display on the iPad that that's going to make the Windows tablets, you know, for presumably more money, look weaker because they're not going to, unless they really pony up and really charge the bucks, they're not going to have that kind of high resolution on them?
Jay said he couldn't really tell much of a difference.
I mean, it's harder to tell the difference going from the 2
to the 3. Yes.
I went from the iPad 1 to the 3, and it's a And I read a lot. I read novels, and I read long form journalism, and I read obviously the web. And to me, it just changes it. It's just so much more comfortable reading on it. Windows tablets will be out in October. A lot could happen between now and then. Windows 8 looks. I've seen Windows 8 on tablets. It looks really good. And the display is really nice. So, you know, a lot of things could happen between now and then. We'll just have to see how that.
Well, one of the problems I think is that there's the content for this enhanced display in the tablet environment is not out there yet. You know, there's not a lot of Retina aware apps and things that are taking advantage of the enhanced display. So
there are some games that kind of do.
But if you go, I had my iPad 2 and my new iPad or whatever side by side. It was hard. I could, you know, on my wallpaper, I could definitely see some enhanced definition and resolution in the image there, but it wasn't dramatic like what I'm hearing from people that are going from the iPad 1. Why you're smiling and giggling? Are you looking at pictures of yourself?
Yes,
he's up on the Jumbotron. It's awesome.
Somebody sent me a picture of we were on the Jumbotron at the. And so it's a picture of
two
me.
Large guys on the Jumbotron.
That's right. And so at least it's not the Kiss Cam. That's all I have to say.
That would be all over the internet if that were me. I would post that.
Well, I'm about. I am. I'll put okay. it. I'll post it later. But I have a show to do. So.
Well, at any rate, I mean, I work on Windows computers all the live long day. I've got a Windows computer at my desktop. I'm not worried about losing my chops in the Windows environment. If anything, one of the things I think that people like myself and maybe Groovehouse might be able to relate to this that we struggle with is that the deployment of new Windows operating systems is behind the curve at any company. So we were running on Windows XP, and we skipped Vista altogether, mm-hmm. and we only really kind of dragged into Windows 7 because new computers were coming out with Windows. And once you were no longer able to buy computers with XP, then you were forced to deal with Windows 7 and take a look at it and see what you were going to do with it. So the opportunities to actually play with and experiment with new operating systems is going to have to go back to being on a personal thing. So I can very easily see myself getting a computer running Windows 8 to be able to learn that. But
I've been trying to shake my Windows skills for years.
Yeah.
Fortunately, every new version that comes out and I don't use it, I'm a little bit better at not knowing what to do.
The more it advances and the less you pay attention, the farther detached you get from the technology.
It isn't being able to power cycle just like riding a bike.
Yes, rebooting stays the same.
Windows 7, I use that for some stuff at work, and the thing that's sort of the oddest to me, and I can see where some people might like it as a feature. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. If you have multiple windows open and you put your mouse over the, it's got the same kind of bar across the bottom like the Mac in a sense with whatever programs you have open, then it shows the multiple windows. But then they don't have like a window menu where when you want a particular one, you always have to go back down and get it to show you all the, and you can't just click on the main one and have it just pop up.
Right click.
Whatever the last one
right
we're click using.
On it. You, right? I know that's a hard concept for somebody who's used Macs for a long time, but you use your right click and you'll get what you're looking for.
You'll get the first one, or you'll get whatever the last one that you had.
No, you'll see the list of what's available, and then you choose the one you want.
Oh, well, no, you don't even have to right click. I mean, on mine, if I mouse over it,
yes,
it
right.
pops
you get
up the
multiple
the choices.
Right. You don't like that?
I haven't decided. It's one of those
about
where
the Windows bar?
Yes.
You know, when you've got a
the
bunch of tabs
yeah.
open in Internet Explorer, then it's a pain in the butt to get to the one that you wanted. Where I guess I'm more used to with a lot of tabs open, like on the Mac, you basically just if you click the icon for that program, whatever the last one that you had in front is the one that you see.
I agree with that.
First.
There's a certain struggle because when you move your mouse over and it shows you all of your open mm-hmm. tabs. Mm-hmm. And
well, and especially since once you choose a tab in, say, Internet Explorer, what comes up? Well, all of them really do. The whole program comes forward.
Right, and they just have that one tab comes to the front. So, yeah, it's. I would rather have Internet Explorer just come up to the last page, the last tab that I was on.
Yeah, and then you pick the other tab.
Because what I'll do is I'll move my mouse onto the Internet Explorer one. It'll explode all the windows.
Oh, I see what he wants.
Explodes all the windows. I just pick one. Mm-hmm. So it brings Internet Explorer back to the front, and then I go to the tab that I want. Instead of trying to figure it out from the
well,
whole
you
place.
Should be if you just click on that. If you,
you
just click
can,
on the button,
but you have to look at them. You have to look at all those balloons, and you go, "Which one is the page that I want to be on?"
It's not like an application group, like where you can command tab through, and then if you want to go through the other windows, it's command.
Well, no, but if let's say that you have six tabs, tab four is the one you last looked at. Other programs came up in front of it. You go and you click Internet Explorer without worrying about the thumbnails, and it'll come forward with the tab that you had up.
That's true. That's true. But
you
when, you,
click
but,
on
but when you move the mouse down there, and all of those things pop up. It's just, it's a little distance.
It's a little bit too much at once. I mean, I'm
you can turn that off, though.
Right. I just ignore it if I want. If I know what I want, I just click it and I don't worry about it.
Some people really love that, though.
I love it.
Some people really love that. In fact, my new Mac convert at work found a program
that duplicates that.
That duplicates that on the Mac.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I told, and I, so I started showing him spaces and stuff. I said, there's better ways to do that. There's other things mm-hmm. that are, you'll like better.
So you have a Padawan?
Kind of.
Well, always there are two.
Hey, when it's the finance guy, that's a really good place to be.
Well, with the finance guy, he knows how much this stuff costs, and he's the one that's going to ultimately sign off on approvals to buy new gear. But the director of IT at my company is he's not a Mac convert, but he's moved from being anti-Mac to Mac tolerant. he got given an iPhone. Which he's actually kind of liking. That's his become his company phone. He through the rotation managed to come across a Verizon iPhone because we use Verizon as our wireless carrier, and somebody left and they left behind an iPhone. So he inherited that, and so he's been using it and he likes it. And he has an iPad for his son, and he's starting to see how that stuff's putting together. So, and he knows that I like the Mac that I've been using it, and so I'm whittling away at him. And talking to him about lost man hours chasing down these viruses and stuff that we do, and but the problem with IT infrastructure is it's not really set up to accept a complete conversion or a widespread adaptation of the Mac platform. But iPhone,
and especially since there's no the server stuff is really it's barely to be quite honest, on the Apple side, the server stuff is now kind of barely, it's small business style.
Yeah. Well, even, I mean, less so the servers, but you talk about your web apps and your applications that are designed that are, you know, talk about applications that are designed around Internet Explorer 6, of all things, that start breaking when you go to Internet Explorer 7, 8, or 9. They're certainly not going to be very friendly to things like Firefox or Safari. So you're kind of trapped in that environment to a certain degree. Okay, so we're going to give out the phone number because we're not going to just talk about my justifications for spending my hard-earned money on a new iPad. I will say this one last defense of myself, that I will say that when I, the one thing that I thought an iPad would be good for would be for displaying my photos or, you know, using as a portfolio. And I was disappointed with the resolution of the display on the iPad 2 for that purpose, because photos at 1024 by 768, not quite there in terms of just showing the resolution and the detail that, you know, we're capable of getting with good lenses and good cameras. So I'm going to be interested in taking this iPad and loading it up with some high-resolution versions of some of my better photos to see how that
translates. You've got to crop them to that. There's a template I've seen online that shows you kind of where the blank spaces will be when you change the rotation or where the masked areas will be, and then you can crop based on that.
Well, that, I don't know if I want to necessarily crop that. I'm happy to have the black space around it if it's cropped to the size that, you know, the aspect ratio that I like. So we'll see. I mean, I'm going to play with it a little bit. But the other thing, and one last thing on this point, is that I knew that if I wanted the iPad 2, that I had to strike while the iron was hot in order to get the most return on the money I had invested in my previous iPad. I did sell it this evening. I sold it to a friend of mine for quite a bit more money than what the Apple is offering for a trade-in. So,
nice.
As Barrett said, I leased the iPad 2 for less than a year for a couple $100.
Right.
So
that works. Right. Well, you know, as people, if you've followed along, I've been traveling somewhat more, particularly to like El Paso. But fascinating, when you go on a plane, you see a tremendous number of iPads.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I sat down, and, you know, this is Southwest, and so once the plane fills up, then I looked, and the whole, you know, so there's three seats on a side, and the row I was on, there was an iPad in every hand on the side I was sitting on, and I looked across the row, and they weren't, and two of the three on the other side had iPads.
Well, I think that's, and that's great right now, because there was that time period, there was a fairly good amount of time where appearing in public with an iPad kind of made you feel a little conspicuous and pretentious, I thought. You know,
just, oh, those days are gone.
Now I'm supposed to come up with something else.
I was having breakfast at my favorite breakfast spot, and I looked around, and there were like six tables with people that had iPads or Kindles.
Yeah, you see a lot of Kindles on planes, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kindle is good on a plane.
I see a lot of people that have multiple platforms. There's a couple that I know that they have... the man uses a Kindle and the woman uses an iPad, and they just have both platforms, and they different reasons to have it.
If you have the new iPad and you're looking for good backgrounds and wallpapers,
you like the 9-inch nails.
Inch nails selection. They took a bunch of the photos from album covers and other illustrations from inside albums and optimized them for that, and they're gorgeous. They're very gorgeous. And if you're a Nine Inch Nails fan, that doesn't hurt
gorgeous,
either.
Gorgeous pictures of real pigs' heads on sticks.
No, there's none of that. None of that. A lot of the stuff from Ghosts, a lot of the thing from the Ghosts selection is there. It looks really good.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Groovehouse is standing by to take your calls and get you screened and put you in the queue so you could be on there. Did you want to chime in with something?
No. Actually, well, Microsoft yesterday put out a memo saying that no more buying iPads with company funds. Like, I guess there was such a problem with that. So they said.
Well, and I wonder if that, you know, there were no exceptions in that email, presuming it's real. I mean, it's leaked. It may or may not be real. Microsoft has neither denied nor confirmed it, which probably says it's real. But there's no mention of exceptions. So developers who create like software for iPads and iPhones and the Mac.
Is there any Microsoft product currently available for the iPad?
Yes,
they were talking about Office being available for the iPad coming up.
There's OneNote is available for the iPad.
Can you develop for the iPad completely in the developer's kit without loading up an actual iPad?
I believe you probably could. Yes.
But the only developer's kit is in Mac.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I bet they just meant for general salespeople and for general office staff. I bet it didn't mean for the people developing on that hardware.
It did not. There were no there were no qualifications in that email.
Well, you know, everything's coming so fast and happening, you know, just one after the other. It's fun to be I can imagine that there will come a time when I probably won't be able to afford the latest, greatest tech. It'll just be so crazy and
it'll just be too instantaneous. It's like you'll buy something and before you even, you know, the digital payment goes through, there's newer tech.
Right.
Is how it's going to be.
That or they'll come out with the version that basically our eyes are too old and not compatible with because it beams it directly to your retina or something.
There'll be something that we're just not genetically capable of.
We can't upgrade your firmware, Jay. Sorry. We're going to end of life you.
Yeah. That's coming sooner than later, isn't it? All right. Well, it sounds to me or looks to me like Groovehouse has successfully corralled a couple of callers. Corralled them. So we're going to take some calls on the air. If you want to be on the air, we got about 20 minutes before the top of the hour, and we take a short break. But we got plenty of time to take calls and answer questions. So hit us with your best shot. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up first or next or first?
Up first on the show today, we are going to take Stacy.
Stacy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey. Jay, how's it going?
Good.
My computer all of a sudden started, like, it just slowed down. My connection, I can't get a Netflix movie to save my life. I can't watch a YouTube video. It's bad. And I'm wondering if there is a good spyware that I can get for free. And then I have another question after that.
Well,
sounds like you've gotten plenty of spyware for free.
You want an anti-spyware for free. Well, I would suggest...
Yeah.
There's Malwarebytes anti-malware. They have a free version of their program that you can download from malwarebytes.org. If you go to geekradio.com and click on the spywares link, I've got a link to that software.
Okay.
So that's a good one. I would scan your system with that to see if you can detect and remove anything.
Are you running an antivirus too?
My follow-up question is, you know, if I do Control-Alt-Delete, or if I go into my add-delete programs, and I'm not very computer savvy, but how do I know what's good to delete and what's not good to delete? How do I know what I'm using, what I'm not using? I mean, the language is cryptic and crazy, and I don't understand it.
Well, Control-Alt-Delete pulls up the running programs, not the installed programs.
Yeah, but sometimes those programs that are running, I'm not using them.
Well, unfortunately, you're right. They are very cryptic, and it's hard to discern what they all are and what they're doing. And you can Google search each one of them to try to learn what it is.
Yeah.
But your better option is to take a look at your installed applications and add remove programs and take a look at those programs, first of all, to see if you need them and maybe remove them, because they'll take, if you remove the software, it'll remove their background running processes as well.
Oh.
So, and then other things you can do is look at those programs to see if they have any components that start up when the computer starts up, and go into the configuration and tell them to turn that stuff off.
Okay.
So, like, you know, for example, I don't have any need to have my Messenger clients start up when I start up, so I turn off all the Yahoos and stuff like that unless I need them, and then I run them. So I tell them not to start up automatically. And a lot of different programs have helper apps that run in the background. Now, all of that being said, if your computer is having performance issues, certainly scanning for spyware is a good idea. Doing some basic system maintenance is a good idea. Making sure you have plenty of free hard drive space, running defrag, and, you know, checking your disk for errors is a good idea. How old is the computer?
It's old.
Old. Okay. So how old? Like several years?
Maybe 8 years old.
Ow, have you ever reloaded the system?
No.
Okay.
That's for geeks like y'all to do.
No, it's for it's like for computer owners like you to do.
Ah.
Or get a new computer, because 8 years, it's time.
Well, and a newer operating system, you're going to have a lot less vulnerability to a lot of what's out there.
So I'm guessing that's running XP. The computer's probably dramatically underpowered and has very few system resources. So I would, if nothing else...
I'm trying to do more with less.
Yeah, well, that's good. And that's it's a noble effort, but it's probably causing you tons of frustration and suicidal thoughts.
Probably wind up doing less with less.
All right.
Or not doing it at all with what I don't want anymore.
Thank you.
All right, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Bye.
All right. So, yeah, 8-year-old PC.
Man, never refresh the OS.
Never refresh the OS. That's just bad. You know, but you know, in 8 years, if you haven't figured out how to do that, that's unfortunate, too.
On the flip side, if she's gone 8 years and hasn't really needed to, that's
impressive.
Shows some decent computing habits for not trashing a system.
Well, you can kind of mitigate having to reinstall the OS. If you've got an 8-year-old computer that you've never done much with and you buy a new PC, then you spend money to avoid the effort that you would take to beef that PC up. Go ahead and get the new computer, get the new operating system, experience the joy of having some fast, clean-running tech in front of you, and go for it. I mean, it's very rewarding, regardless of whether you're buying a new iPad or whatever, to have new tech. And, you know, if you can make it 8 years without having that experience, good for you, but treat yourself, because you can buy for... you know, relatively little money compared to what you probably paid for that computer 8 years ago, something really fast. You could buy the cheapest computer on the market.
Cheapest refurb, even.
Yeah, you could buy like a $300 computer, and it will seem like the Enterprise compared to one of those UFOs that dangled on a string in the 50s sci-fi movies. So treat yourself. All right. 713-526-5738. I hear that the phone still has a little bit of that echo in it.
That was from Pete.
Probably. Oh, was that Pete?
Yeah, because there's no bleed over on the phone line.
Okay.
We checked.
There didn't appear to be, There was a little bit of static when I put it way up.
All right, well, who do we have up next, Grewhouse?
All right, up next, we are going to take Misha.
Misha, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
I am just groovy. Thank you for asking.
Groovy?
Yes, I am.
Hey,
I would like your opinion on...
I'm against it. I mean, what? Oh, the Kindle Fire.
On the Kindle Fire versus Barnes & Noble Nook tablet.
Ooh.
Like the Nook Color, I guess, is what you'd be putting up?
Well, there is now one called the Nook tablet.
Or just the Nook tablet.
That's the one that's $199.
I have not tried the Nook tablet or either of the Nooks. I've seen them. I do have a Kindle Fire, and I've played with it. I really like it. It's a great value. When it initially came out, the software was kind of balky and slow. They've since released two updates, and it's much better now. And I think particularly if you like Amazon products, if you use their streaming video, if you're an Amazon Prime customer, it is a great tablet to have. It makes it very easy to buy and read books and to watch video and to listen to their music. So I think you couldn't go wrong if you wanted that. I can't speak to the Nook products.
Okay, I was just trying to figure out which one to go for.
I will tell you what my thoughts are on this, and this is having not used either of them, so maybe I'm more qualified than Dwight, who's obviously biased. My
experience, I think, is the word.
In terms of e-books, it seems to me that Kindle is the leader in doing this, they're the iPad of e-readers. They do a good job. I've heard nothing but good about the Kindle Fire. Nothing but good about the Kindle Fire. And I've heard some okay good stuff about the Nook, but it doesn't seem to have as much of the grab as the Kindle Fire does. And when I've looked at a Kindle Fire and played with it, I've really enjoyed the experience and thought that if I had not, you know, gone over to the iSide, that I would have probably bought a Kindle Fire.
The one thing to note is that you can go to a Barnes & Noble and they have the Nook devices there at their stores. And so you can play with it and kind of get a feel for it. And I think that Target and Best Buy both sell the Fire.
So, Best Buy does that.
Yeah, so you can go in there and take and get a look and see the comparison. But the nice thing about Barnes & Noble having brick-and-mortar stores is that you can actually try it there.
Right. I have a coworker that had the Fox Hives with Kindle Fire, and it looks awesome. I was curious about music-wise.
All of the music, it has a minimal amount of storage on it. Amazon has what's called the Cloud Player, and it plays over the over a Wi-Fi connection. It doesn't have 3G, so if you don't have access to Wi-Fi, you're not going to be able to play your music unless you store some of it on there. Mm-hmm. I believe there is a Nook tablet that has 3G available. So that is one thing to keep in mind about the Nook.
There's a recent flood of unwanted iPad 2s and 1s on the market right now, too. So it might be another thing to consider.
Yeah, that is a thought.
Because people that are upgrading are looking to sell, and then there's some reduced prices on both of them right now if you wanted to buy one new. And there's nothing shabby about reading a book on an iPad right now. So, but I if you have somebody that already has the Kindle Fire and you've looked at that and you've seen what it's like, take time to go to the Barnes & Noble and pick up the Nook tablet and play with that a little bit and just see what your thoughts are on it.
That's an idea. All right, guys, thank you so much for your help. I appreciate you.
All right, thanks for your
great
call.
Great show. Bye. Have a groovy night.
You too. Bye-bye. Groovy. Out, man.
Yes, what?
I said groovy. Oh, yeah. Okay. I see what you did there. Oh. All right.
Yeah.
All right, 713-526-5738 as we approach a little closer to the break, but still far enough away to where we have time to take another call. And I see we have one in the queue.
Yes, we do.
Who is it, and what do they want?
That person is Alan.
Alan, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I went to the iSide, and I'm glad I switched, but I have clients that require that I use certain software that's Windows-based. And I just can't wait for it to move to the Mac. So I wanted to know what would work. I was really afraid to partition some of my hard drive to use the Windows operating system. And I decided that the best route was to go spend the money on a Mac Pro and have two hard drives. So I was going to ask you, how would you do it if you had the money to do it reasonably well?
You're looking to dual boot?
What I want to be able to do is to run some Windows-based programs.
You should go with a VM like Dwight does.
Yeah, use a Parallels.
Use Parallels?
Parallels is the name of the software. And you can run Lion on it. And I believe they also now have it set up so if you can get a developer's copy of Mountain Lion, you can run that.
Talking about wanting to be able to run Windows.
Windows 2. So,
right, but in other words, what I'm saying is you can run more than just Windows on it. You run a whole bunch of different.
No, but he wants to use a Mac and be able to access Windows.
Right.
But I understand what he's saying. I could run almost anything.
If I got the
new version of Parallels.
And so I run Windows on all of my Macs. One of the cool things about it that you can do is you can run Windows in parallel in the full screen mode on the Mac, and then just toggle back and forth between Windows and Mac desktops, just back and forth, or you can run Windows as a window, as though it's its own program on top of a Mac, and drag things between the desktops.
So, well, what about like the new? I'm going to get a desktop, and the Mac Pro's got all sorts of hard drive bays.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you actually just dedicate an entire drive?
No, you don't dedicate any drive to it. What you could do when you install Parallels is you install Parallels, which is an application.
Mm-hmm.
And then you install Windows, which runs like an application inside the Mac, inside of Parallels. So what happens is you have your Mac desktop in front of you, and say you have a Windows application. Let's just use something like Microsoft Word for Windows,
mm-hmm.
for example. You'd have an icon. You could have an icon right on your desktop. You double-click it, it launches Parallels and then runs that app right there on the Mac desktop. So you don't have to allocate a separate hard drive. You don't have to boot.
Okay.
You don't have to boot into one or out of the other operating system. You have them basically both running at the same time.
The way Parallels works is that it when you install it, it creates a virtual hard drive. It creates one file that essentially is a hard drive on your existing hard drive. Windows runs within that. And you actually, when Parallels is running, it puts a little little icon of a drive on the Mac desktop, and you can actually drill down on the Mac side in the Finder into your Windows files.
So let's talk about the resources. I had always heard about this capability, but it frightened me. I thought the idea of mixing these things was like oil and water.
It may work,
you know, but I just thought it would be unstable, and I was frightened.
No.
It sounds a lot better than it was.
It's excellent. Okay. And the one thing you want to do is you want to make sure you have a lot of memory.
That's what I was going to ask you. Hard drive memory. Storage space and RAM, machine memory. What are you talking about?
I would say I run with, on my MacBook Pro, I run with 8 mm-hmm. gig of RAM, and I devote 4 and 4. But if you're not running really heavy-duty Windows programs, if you're just running Excel and Word and that type of thing, you can drop back to 3 and 5. I do that sometimes. And give more memory to the Mac operating system, and you can even drop lower than that on my iMac, which is older. The maximum memory that I can have in my iMac is 6 gig, and I will run 4 gig on the Mac OS and 2 gig on Windows.
Well, the new Mac Pro, I think, goes with 32 or 64. If you've got the money to buy the processor.
But depending on what you do, that may be overkill.
Well, that's what the other thing. I wanted to pay for a little cushion so that I didn't have problems and crash and lose things. It's a deadline kind of business. It's translating different languages, and I didn't want to lose anything, get stuck in the middle of a job, and I thought.
No, it's pretty fluid, and if you've got a machine with the horsepower, it's going to be a very smooth and fluid experience.
It'll be fine with the machine you're describing.
But I have a MacBook Pro that's got the 8 gigs.
Listen, we're unfortunately running out of time before we reach the top of the hour, so we're going to have to cut you short.
Oh, you've helped me. You give me what I need to know. I can fill in the gaps later. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks for your call. All right. Yeah, I mean, in today's computing environment, it's actually a very valuable option for you.
The only thing he may want to consider, if he's still listening, that we didn't get a chance to mention is he may want to go with a solid-state drive if that fits, unless he needs big capacity for the speed benefits you get. I mean, obviously, if it's for his business and if he's got the budget for big RAM, then he may also have the budget for big SSD and get that performance too.
Okay. All right, well, we got about 20 seconds, and we need to take a quick break here, so we're going to take care of some station business. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groove House.
Groovy, man.
Groovy. April is Financial Literacy Month, and the Houston Midtown Society for Financial Awareness chapter is leading local incentives to enhance financial literacy. SOFA is a nonprofit educational speakers bureau that provides speakers for businesses, churches, synagogues, civic organizations, city and county governments, as well as other nonprofit organizations. SOFA's mission is to end financial illiteracy one community at a time by conducting generic financial education workshops across the country. Call Chris Hensley at 832-231-9697 or go to HoustonMidtownChapter.bbnow.org to request a workshop. Again, that's HoustonMidtownChapter.bbnow.org or 832-231-9697. This is KPFT Houston.
Want to help KPFT but can't make the drive out to the Little House on Lovett Boulevard? A great way to aid KPFT is as simple as logging into Facebook and Twitter. Connect with KPFT via social media. It's simple. Just visit twitter.com/KPFT and facebook.com/KPFT Houston. Then share our links and donate form with your social circles on Twitter and Facebook. Chances are you know people who may not know KPFT, and you'll introduce them to the fantastic music, interviews, news, and more that you hear daily on this radio station. Remember, just visit twitter.com/KPFT or facebook.com/KPFT Houston to promote and support KPFT online. This is Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Hey, Barrett. What's happening?
I forgot how it goes. Not much. Seeing some shows.
Not much.
Rumor around town is that there's no Barrett time.
That's true.
No Barrett time.
No Barrett time.
No Barrett time. All right.
Yeah.
We'll take it away from Barrett.
Wow. Even that lack of Barrett time is bad. Barrett time fell out of my bag somewhere between Commonwealth and Love It.
You can't make it up as you go along?
I don't even know my own intro after 5 years.
You drop proprietary information in your walk of shame?
I leaked information all the way here.
Barrett leaks. All right. So, yeah, it's unfortunate we don't have a Barrett time because Barrett, he did not budget time for disaster.
I was gonna get here early. The sun was shining, and the Vespa broke down, and I wound up pushing it probably over a mile. And it just kind of killed my will to write and the time I had to write. So, yeah.
Excuses. Oh, you're no. Fired.
Tune in next time for Groove House Down.
Yeah, don't put Groove House on the spot.
For real.
Groove House will be calling Barrett next week going, okay, there's 3 hours before showtime. You got that thing written yet? I'm coming over there. Do you need a ride?
I'll call back in 15 minutes to check.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. And we're going to, wow.
We got a full bank of emptiness. A
full bank of no calls. So here on Technology Bites, we're inviting you to call 713-526-5738. 713-526.
They were all so excited for the Barrett time, and they're just waiting and waiting.
Now I'm just imagining Groovehouse being like the newspaper boy from Better Off Dead and like following Barrett around going, I want my Barrett time.
All right, I've been using my iPad as a hotspot because the internet connection here is so terrible. And the battery life is not bad. I've drained about 40% of my iPad battery doing this. Not too bad. It seems to be
How much of your data package do you have left?
Let's see. I've got myself a little data monitor here. I've hardly touched it.
What is the name of your data monitor app?
I am using a program, and I don't know if it's any good, called Data Monitor.
Hmm. And so it isn't tied into your Verizon account. It's just...
It just monitors the data that the computer is using, both on the Wi-Fi as well as the Verizon connection.
Data Monitor. I will snag that puppy right now.
Because with Data Monitor, you can go in and set up. It'll tell you how much you're using in megabytes or gigabytes, and you can put in your monthly limit. And you could also tell it when to reset on what cycle, so it'll mine reset.
Interesting.
It's it seems good. I haven't been doing a lot on the internets here this evening, so.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like I mean sharing a 4G connection with your laptop is a lot like being on good Wi-Fi.
Right.
It's kind of surprising. I was getting 20 some odd megabits. Downloads in the Galleria area. It's a little slower here in the Montrose, unless you live at Dwight's house across the street from the cell tower.
I got 48 megabits down the other day. I was astounded. I got a screen grab of it, too. It's great. Excellent.
All right. 713-526-5738. Looks like we do have a call in the queue, so we'll tap Groovehouse to give us that.
All righty. Well, up next on the second half of the show, we're going to take Tim.
Tim, you're on
the
air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What can we do for you?
I love the show, guys. I just had a question about wireless networking. Right now I have a WRT310N wireless router by Linksys.
Right.
I'm in an apartment building with like 15 other routers overlapping. Mm. And I'm getting some really bad
crosstalk
speed.
And...
Yeah, crosstalk and speed. Maybe around less than 40 feet away from the router. And my question is, should I what are the benefits of upgrading to like a E3200 or E4200? Basically, a dual band router.
A dual band is going to give you a lot better potential for connectivity because of the dual band. You're not going to have as much interference.
This is on the five gigahertz side.
Yeah.
The one thing about 5 gigahertz is that it doesn't have the range that the 2.4 does, so there's a trade-off. So if you're in a big area, your 2.4 may actually be a better connection.
But if you're in an apartment, then it should be okay.
Right.
You know, just
the
2.4 has gotten really, really crowded.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So even if I upgrade the router, the fact that all the channels are basically saturated, is that going to...
Well, on five uses different channels and they're allocated differently.
Yeah, so it's different. So all of your 802.11b and g stuff and your garage door openers and some cell phones, they use 2.4 gigahertz frequency,
mm-hmm.
and all of the other gear, I believe it's 5.2 gigahertz. So it's two totally different chunks of the spectrum. So you're not going to be competing with, you know, everything else.
And you're not going to be competing with all the other people that have the 2.4 gigahertz. Wireless routers, you know,
mm-hmm.
not everybody's spent the money to get the dual band to get the 5 gigahertz range, so you're going to be in a less crowded area frequency-wise, even if there are a lot of other routers around you because they're using the other frequency.
And newer routers, even on the 2.4 gigahertz thing, they're smarter about which channel to pick and how they figure out what is what's crowded, so you may actually, in general, get better performance out of the 2.4.
But there's still the assumption that the other neighbors aren't also using 5 gigahertz.
That is somewhat of an assumption, yes, and I think it tends to be.
It's still pretty true. It's a lot less popular. There was 802.11a, which was out for a while, and you saw some of that gear out for a while, but really it hasn't really come back until, you know, the dual band stuff.
Now, are you using an end device to connect to this router?
The problem is I'm in mixed mode right now, so one of the possibilities is I could upgrade all of my wireless devices to N and then use N only on the router.
Well, the nice thing about the dual band is that you can allocate one for N only,
mm-hmm.
and then do the other one for G only, so you don't even have to do mixed mode on that. So if you do have N devices, they can connect on the one frequency. And I use that for all my multimedia at the house, so all my...
My main concern is with the N devices, because I'm trying to... The goal is to stream full HD to my tablet and other devices.
You definitely want to use the 5 gigahertz band. It's good for that.
So I would have to, because the current router is only, I think it's 2.4 only. So
right, that's why
I would verdict upgrade.
Yeah, the 6400 is the version 2, I think, is the one that Dwight was mentioning mm-hmm. that he had, is just super good. And I have the 6400 myself. 6400N, it's not the version 2, but I saw a dramatic improvement in my wireless at the house. I'm streaming HD video to my TV wirelessly using Netflix, and it's more than half the house away from the access point, so it's working great. And it just jumped up. It was impressive to see. So everything was N before, but this is just so much better.
Well, perfect. Thanks, guys. I'll probably do that upgrade and maybe let you know how it goes.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Thanks. Have a good evening.
All right, you too. You know, and if it's buy it from a place that has a good return policy. I mean, if it doesn't solve your problem, take it back. You know, but have the joy of setting up a new router in your house. Nothing beats it. Actually, didn't daisy chain so much, but I have two routers now in my house. So I have the dual band, and then I have my old routers connected too, and I've got it got an IP from the new router, and it routes its own stuff, so I can use that for the dual bands. Also have a guest mode and all that, which is kind of cool, but mm-hmm. I set this up as my open public Wi-Fi and locked it down. So
does is the iPhone not able to do AirDrop?
No.
Is the iPad not able to
no.
do AirDrop?
AirDrop is just the Mac.
That's Apple makes horrible products that I hate. I don't know why anybody would want an Apple product.
It was like the guy Dwight wrote his weekly print column, which if you look hard enough, you can find it online. And you talked about the new iPad in mm-hmm. your Tuesday column, mm-hmm. and somebody went on there. And you mentioned in your column that the new iPad did not have Siri, and then somebody commented, he's like, that's why I hate Mac. They don't have Siri. They don't let you configure it. And, you know, blah, 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 went off on it. Let Siri be the reason, the starting point for his anti-Mac.
But the dictation feature on it works really, really well.
I just don't get why you have to be online to use it.
Because that's where the translation is done. It's basically the same thing as Dragon Dictation, the Dragon Dictation app.
Does the Dragon Dictation also require?
Yes. And in fact, the Android speech to text also goes to servers.
No, that's not true. Android doesn't make you do that. Android is about freedom.
freedom to connect with Google.
I like connecting to Google.
Okay.
Yeah, now you've got Google all over you.
I can't win. Not here. My win days are over. I'm not winning anymore.
Winning.
713-526-5738. Help me, please. 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air with the hateful, hateful men of Technology Bites.
We're full of love. We're not full of hate.
You know, I've really started to recognize the futility of asking for help online. I posted a question on my Facebook about, I want to know, and I still want to know, and I know maybe somebody out there listening can tell me, on the pay-as-you-go data plan on the iPad, rather than having to hover at the cutoff time at midnight for when the auto-renew is going to kick in, how do you kill off the auto-renew? And there's no option, at least not on the 4G plan that I have, to cancel auto-renew. You have to cancel your account.
Cancel that credit card.
Well, somebody mentioned using a temporary credit card or a prepaid card to pay for it, which is a reasonable option, I suppose. But from what I'm reading, and I can't tell if it's true, you can go onto the iPad and cancel the data plan. And they talk about this will turn off the auto-renew, but you can also tell it not to delete the account. And they'll automatically delete the account after 60 days of inactivity. But what I want to know is if the data plan will stay usable during that 60 days and then just dry up or turn itself off, depending on whether you use up all the data or if you reach the end of your 30-day period. It will only, if I'm wrong, I believe it will do that, but if I'm wrong, it will cost me $20 to find out. Because I could go on here and cancel my plan and then see if I still have data in the morning. And if I do, then I'd expect that data to keep going until the end of my 30-day period.
I would think that would be the case because you're canceling auto-renew is the way that it's listed here. They don't give a lot of details, but...
Yeah, but it talks about, you know, you can delete your account now or delete your account later. So is it canceling auto-renew or is it canceling the account altogether? And this is on Verizon.
Well, it's the account... If you want to shut the account off completely so it doesn't, the account doesn't exist anymore?
No, I don't want to shut the account. I mean, when I looked at the delete, if you go into your settings for the 3G or the 4G on one of these iPads, they give you the option when you can cancel, you can modify your account. And one of the options is to cancel your data plan. So you hit cancel, and then there's two options that you can choose. One is cancel and delete my account now, or cancel and delete my account later. And then if you delete later, then the account stays there in case you want to log back into the account and buy some more data.
Right.
But what I'm wondering is if you cancel and delete later, does it turn off the auto-renew only and leave your data plan in place until you exhaust it?
I see.
A year ago, they were doing it the wrong way. I'm seeing a couple of people actually canceled the auto-renew, and then they tried the same with the Verizon on 2 iPad, and they canceled the plan entirely. They got an email saying that any remaining data would be lost. That was like 9 months ago, so they could have fixed it. But as of 9 months ago, you would lose everything.
Yeah. I've done a lot of Google searching on it and have not found a definitive answer. So, right.
I have another technical question.
Let me go with the phone number real quick. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, we have all of our lines are open. 713-526-KPFT. And now a question from Flicted.
Flicted, you're on the air.
Flicted, you're on the air with Technology Bites. How can we help you?
Have any of y'all watched My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic?
No.
Not lately.
But you have seen it.
No.
He's thinking of the actual...
So it's Nose All Around?
Yeah. Nose All Around.
Okay.
My Little Pony what?
Do we have homework now?
Friendship is Magic. I'm scared to watch it because then some people who watch it turn into bronies, and I'm scared to become a brony.
We would do an intervention before that ever happened, I would think.
A brony? Okay, there is a wiki article on it.
Mm-hmm.
An animated television series that premiered on October 10, 2010 on the United States cable network, The Hub. Hasbro Studios and DHX Media's animation studio in Vancouver. Blah, blah, blah. So it's not like a parody of My Little Pony. It's like the real thing.
Yeah, and bronies are fans of it. You can go to... There's actually a My Little Brony site.
And what is that, like men that like ponies?
It's still loading, which is probably a good thing. Yeah.
So, no, I have not seen it. Are you planning to watch it? Why would you watch it? What's the thing? I mean, do you want to see what the buzz is about?
Well, I've seen some bronies talking about it on YouTube. And they say the animation's really good and that the storyline's actually really good. The voice acting is really good. But I'm a little nervous about it because I don't think I want to become a brony.
So bronies are bro ponies. They're older men, 20s to their 40s, who are dedicated to everything My Little Ponies.
Well, I'm thinking that what you could probably do is go ahead and have the My Little Pony experience. And if you find yourself, you know, going down a dark tunnel that you can't quite extract yourself from, probably just need to go see the Hunger Games and you'll be all set.
I think the Harley needs a ponytail.
Ooh.
My Little Harley tail.
Well, you know, they actually have a... Actually, if you look on YouTube, there are a bunch of videos about bronies. And they have one called, like, the manliest brony or whatever. I mean, he's a guy and it looks like he's probably in his late 30s or 40s. Huge handlebar mustache, like, big build. I mean, serious, like, biker-looking guy. He's a brony.
Why do I think that if you were to get involved in the brony culture, they would look at you and think you were creepy?
Well, look at that guy. I don't know what he goes by, but anyway, if you look for like the manliest brony on YouTube.
Oh, manliest brony.
Manliest yeah. brony.
That sounds like an after-school special.
Yeah, I think on the website, you can just check the box and they'll add to the sex offenders list.
Dang.
MLP film.
Oh, wow.
There's a video of the manliest brony.
They're, you know, yeah, they're, but the thing is, they're serious about it, you know, and they have a sense of humor, but they also are serious about it, so, you know.
Do they show up at Comic-Con, or where do they hang out? Is this like furries for the new generation?
I think they had a
brony-con?
I think they had a brony-con, yeah, this last year.
You could go pwn the bronies.
Yeah, I was just curious.
BronyCon.org.
I was just curious if any of y'all had watched it and if y'all were closet bronies or not. Because
yeah, like I'm going to admit that in this group of people, if it were true, which it's not. Oh, yeah. Flicted. There could be no harm in admitting to Flicted that I was in some way interested in bronies.
All right, Jay Lee's on 24-hour brony watch.
No, my youngest daughter is in elementary school, and I think that My Little Pony is too effete and effeminate for her. So,
but there is some really interesting rainbow art for the BronyCon 2012.
Where's that being held?
Probably at the DEF CON hotel. So,
oh, great.
So now we do have some calls, bronies.
Yeah, but this now, I was driving through town and there was this cool radio show, kind of gay, but it was the Brony show. All right. Groovehouse is still screening a call, so let's see info on BronyCon. It would be funny if it was at the same hotel as DEF CON. During the same time. All right, Groovehouse.
You can also go at Brohoof.
Brohoof?
Brohoof.
Mm. Oh, is that like a hoof pump?
Y'all are scaring me.
There's not a lot of info about BronyCon 2012 available. Oh, here it is. Events and schedule. BronyCon Summer 2012 will be a two-day event. What? Only two? June 30th to July 1. The convention opened at 10 a.m. Blah, blah, blah.
Is it in Vegas?
I'm trying to find out where they don't talk about where it is.
Meadowlands Expo Center in Secaucus, New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Yeah.
That figures.
No. Brony capital of the world.
Yeah, their special guest performance is going to be by Bruce Springsteen, Brony. Brony Springsteen.
I was hoping for Brony Idol singing, Brony Brony. I guess not.
Born to Gallop.
We do have some callers.
Gallop Pole.
All right, I might become a Brony after all, just because, you know, all the jokes involved.
I think you should get yourself a Brony helmet. You could have like a rainbow tail coming off your helmet as you push your broken scooter.
I'm going to start with the screensaver and go from there.
Yeah, it's going to be a turf war between the bronies and the
the furries.
The Hello Kitty gang. All right. 713-526-5738. Time to brony up. Groove House?
Yes.
Yes, Wilbur?
Can I brush you?
You can braid my tail.
Yikes. Look what you've done to us, Flickton. All right, Groove House.
That was my technical question.
Yeah. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next, we're going to take Quadja.
Quadja, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Okay. Hi. We have a small office, and we have our DSL connection with about 3 computers in there. But it's running extremely slow because we are far from the central office, even though we have business DSL.
Yeah.
So I have been trying to connect through cable, and the cable company is not available in our area. So I tried the wireless option, and I get a clear wireless, and I'm not getting very good speeds. And I was wondering if you can recommend some kind of wireless solution that we can use for this small office.
Where do you, just out of curiosity, where is your clear access point located? Like, is it in the center of the office? Is it near a window?
So I have tried, actually started from our basically server closet, and then I moved around different windows, and I do get all 5 bars. You know, this is one of the new Wi-Fi units that we got.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I have 5 bars, it just gives like a 1.5 meg download and about like less than a, you know, meg for upload speed. So I'm not getting very good results, you know, but it's better than the DSL we have because that stays red in like upload, you know, and we have tweaked it and talked to the AT&T and they said they cannot do much.
What's the option where you get the cell tower in your living room or the...
Well, that's really for voice calls.
Just for voice calls?
Yeah.
And it relies on your local internet connection to support that.
Right.
What part of town are you on?
This is in FM 1960 and Walters Road area.
Oh yeah.
So north side of town, close to I-45.
You know what you might. It's not cheap, and this is for a business.
Yeah, this is for a business.
And do you know how much data you use by any chance?
It's not a whole lot. We just use like emails and browsing. We have our.
You might investigate. Looking at, there are some business solutions for LTE, which is what the third generation iPad, and you can get 4G MiFis that do this. And, you know, Verizon, I don't know about AT&T, but I think Verizon has a solution they'll sell to you, but it can be pretty expensive. I think 10 gigabytes is $80. And for a mobile device, that's fine. I don't know about an office. Depends on, you know, how big attachments and that type of thing you do. But that's really fast and works well, but I don't know how it would be for a business.
Okay, and I just got this program a little bit late, but I was heard somebody was getting a 20 meg download on a wireless.
That's Verizon.
That's the Verizon
4G LTE.
Yeah.
Verizon 4G, and that's, you say it's about like $80?
$80
like
for about 10 gig.
That's not a lot
for a
business. I mean, you'd have to really police your users to make sure they're not streaming YouTube videos all the time and downloading personal content. But if you're using it strictly for email and surfing the web, it might be an option.
Yeah, and that's what this is. We have our exchange hosting to a third party, and it's just 3 users on emails most of the day.
Well, again, presuming, you know, assuming that you don't have any big attachments that might work, you can contact Verizon's business office. They have information on the web, and you can explore it with them and see what they would think.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks for your call. All right, bye-bye. So Flicked, I'm thinking that you and I need to take a ride in July.
Go find some bronies.
I mean, I'm looking at the schedule for BronyCon 2012. in the main hall, spelled M-A-N-E. In the main hall. Bronyville, an ever-free radio panel. I'm guessing that's some popular online podcast for the bronies. Dr. Psych-ology brony study results. They're going to have the Equestria online panel. There's a thing at 6 p.m. for Epic Cupcake Time 2.
Oh, well, we've got to hoof it there.
And there is going to be a costume contest, a pony auction, and then at night for the closing for the party on Saturday night, I guess, is Brony Palooza. And, there's an Equestria online hands-on demo going on. The Friends from Dream Valley hands-on demo.
Hands-on what?
Your ponytail, probably. Voice actress singing. Oh, signings. Never mind. That's interesting. They have the voice actress. There's no voice actor signings. The bronies are only interested in the women who do the voiceover work. Is that
well,
a thing?
See, the thing is, the people I saw that were in the videos that were bronies, I mean, they didn't.
You've seen the brony
like
video?
We're losing them.
Yeah, on YouTube. Okay. They didn't appear to be all that odd. They seem like
perfectly natural pony lovers.
One of them said that the people who did, or the woman who did this, the new My Little Pony, because all these guys were like, I was aware of My Little Pony back in the 80s. It was a really horrible franchise. The videos were horrible and everything. And I really wasn't too interested in this, but my friends kept saying how good it was, and so finally I was like, okay, whatever, I'll watch it. And they said, this is done by the lady that did Powerpuff Girls.
Okay.
And so, like, the animation's really good, the voice acting's really good.
I'm a Powerpuff Girl fan. I like Powerpuff Girls.
You're going to be a brony.
Maybe. And that's with an I, not a Y.
I could be an I brony.
I think that's dangerous. I think if you look too deeply into the brony, you become the brony.
Chicks dig unicorns.
I was never into Powerpuff Girls, but, I think that's part of the attraction for these people.
That kind of animation style that they did, and they did it with did a couple of different cartoons. Even Invader Zim kind of used that style, and that stuff was.
And they said the storylines are actually good. Like the plot's actually good.
What was it? Samurai Jack?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was a great cartoon.
You're gonna be a brony too.
No, I will not, because I've got control. I will not look at the bronies. I won't look at the ponies.
Groovehouse, Barry is gonna trip and fall into a rainbow. All right, Groovehouse, save us from our bronies. Bronyness.
I shall.
All right,
we'll take another call, and that's gonna be Bobby.
Bobby, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Okay, thanks. I have problems with passwords, and especially Google. I have a real hard time remembering my password because I have an Android, and it's supposed to be synced over there. And then I had two Google accounts, and that was difficult, and I can't get into anything. And it's really hard to retrieve a password, and then I have a small DSL question after that.
Well, Google password recovery, if you set up your account right, should actually be pretty easy.
Yeah.
But if you don't actually have, like, a recovery account or a phone number tied to it where they can send you a replacement password, then you might be a little out of luck. You might, but is there a Google tech support? Is there Google? I mean,
you can email them. It's kind of hard to find, but you can email them, and you'll get a response in a couple of days. But again, as Jay said, if you set up your account right, they can send you the password reset instructions to either a secondary email address or to your phone. Did you set it up properly?
Well, it seems like I did, but it's really hard and to get on there. And I don't know. Passwords have always, I don't have a overreaching, I don't have a global scheme to do passwords. And I really screw them up sometimes. And some are similar. And then I get them mixed up.
Yeah, see, I mean, to me, the good there's a couple ways you can do that. One way is to find a pattern that you can use that you always know, depending on the website, you're going to use a specific pattern plus something specific to that website. So you use a specific phrase or word, and then you add the website name in there or something that makes it each password different, but similar enough that you know the pattern. Also, there's some programs like 1Password, and there's a bunch of different ones where you can store your passwords all in a central location.
To make it easiest, I think Flicted's idea is the best. So you could choose, like, you know, two words, like red dog, so it's not just a single word. And then what I do, or not what I do, but what you could do is you could take just, like, the first three letters, and not the www, but, like, the first three letters from each of the domains, and that's your password. That way you know your password, you know you go to the website. If you go to Amazon, you know it's red dog, AMA.
Okay. All right. And okay, now, the other thing, maybe I'll try these again because it's been really bad. Now, I've had my DSL down, and they upgraded it, and the Comcast people came out, and they put in a new network interface. And the thing is, they wired it with the, they said they put my DSL on the green pair. Okay. In the interface, they have the blue pair on the tip and ring, and the green pair is on the black and the yellow, which is T1R1. So do I have to copy that at the jack because I don't have telephone at all?
So you're trying to extend your DSL into the house to a particular jack in a particular room?
Yeah, one jack in one room. That's all.
I'm surprised they didn't do that for you.
Well, they don't go in the house unless you pay them another $1,000. You know how that is.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, it's just twisted pair.
Yeah.
So all you have to do is extend that pair that the DSL is on right off the jack where it terminates on into where you're going to terminate it into the house.
Right. But it goes on T1. I mean, does it go on tip and ring or T1 and R1?
I don't know the answer.
I'm pretty
that.
Sure it goes on the two middle,
the middle ones,
the ones that right. are normally blue and blue white. I think.
Oh, you're talking about just a 4-prong RJ11.
Yeah.
Yeah, center two, straight through wiring.
Okay, so I'll have to put the green on the tip and ring in the center two. Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't just yeah. So long as it's the same on the both.
He wired the blue and the green, and the blue is on the tip and ring.
Doesn't.
And the green is on T1 and R1.
Oh, that's kind of, yeah, that's kind of weird. Usually it's the two center.
Well, he wired it in the network that way. And they're coded, they're color-coded, and he wired the green, which he told me he put the data on the green.
Do you have wiring in your house?
Yeah, and I did it myself, and it's good. But
so you're not
split out probably. Did he actually split out the DSL signal from the like the normal phone signal? Yeah, so it's four different pairs of wires at this point.
Do you have four wires terminated?
I have two pairs, four wires terminated.
Two pairs.
And are you using the red, the blue, white, and
it's and blue, white, and white.
It's and I think that? The four is blue, white, and orange, white. I think
it's on the cable
of the four. Yeah. But then the newer style is red and green, and then
yellow and black.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yellow and black is the tip T1 R1.
Right.
And my green is on T1 R1. The green pair is on T1 R1.
That's weird.
And so I'm thinking I have to I don't know if I'm supposed to go that way when I get in the house.
I would say just look at how he did it, and however he did it, just
mirror that.
Use the same cable.
Yep. I don't know.
I mean, I think your DSL modem, though, will need it to hit the two centers.
Okay. All right, I'll put the green on the two centers. That sort of answers it. That's where it has to hit. That's what I'm asking.
I'm pretty sure that's correct.
Okay. I'll try that. See, and then AT&T has you go through the Supreme Court to get it. Every time you change something, they go back to, you know, prosecution and jail time if you mess up.
Do you have crimpers there? Do you have the ability to crimp cables?
Pardon?
Do you have a crimper?
Yeah, I actually do, but I have a wired jack, which is with screw terminals.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could use a punch down.
You have a 66 punch down block.
I have a punch down. I have a 66 block where I cross connect everything in my house. But right. I only have right now. I have no phone, only DSL.
Yeah, that shouldn't matter. You could actually correct it at the 66 block if you needed to. You just experiment around, plug it, you know, take a normal flat ribbon cable, plug it in, and then experiment at the 66 block until you get data on the DSL modem.
Yeah. Well, if they allow you to do it, but see, they wait 24 hours so they'll give you a password. It's like they're really too overbearing when it comes to that.
Sorry that you're having so much trouble with that.
I know. It's painful. But I think you've helped me. I know the two center is a tip one, a tip and ring. I mean,
all right. Well, good luck.
I know that. Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for your call. Ow.
I was going to tell you also, be careful when you're looking up brony stuff. Don't start searching for pony play.
Why is that something? I'm going to go search for pony play.
Way different.
Don't do it at work. It's something completely different.
All right.
So, brony, okay.
Sadly, I already
pony
know,
play.
I already know what that is. I already know what that is. All right. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Save us from Flickens.
Yes, I shall. Up next, we are going to take Levi.
I'm going to decorate your motorcycle. Levi, you're on the air.
Hey.
Hey.
I actually called 2 weeks ago, but it wasn't. But I called at the very end because I got off work, so I didn't get a chance.
All right.
Anyway, I noticed on there's this on the YouTube mobile app for Android.
Yeah.
There's several a lot of channels that I watch a lot of videos from. The thing is, a lot of these people have been posting videos since ages ago. And the thing is, on the YouTube mobile app, it seems like whenever I scroll down, and their upload the list, it just, you know, after a certain point, it just stops loading more videos. It won't, you know, I can't view older videos on their channel. It won't pop up.
Well, I've not ever really used YouTube that way. I mean, what I typically do is I just go onto YouTube and either look at somebody's channel or search for content that I'm looking for. But you can also set up your own channel on YouTube to where you can actually go in and build favorite lists. So I don't know. Are you just looking to scroll through ancient content from somebody on your phone?
Pretty much. I mean, I know that let's say if I go on my computer and I look at the name of one of their oldest videos, and I search it on my phone, it'll come up. Yeah, it'll come up. But the thing is, if I go on their channel, generally, you know, on YouTube on the computer, you can go, you know, thousands of videos. You know, it'll go all the way to the end. You know, and generally the way they get around that is they just have a next button, like next page.
Right.
So they don't have to have everything loaded at the same time. I can understand why they would put a cutoff limit on it, you know, for infinite scrolling. But, you know, do you know of any, like, alternative YouTube apps maybe that I could use?
You on Android or?
It's Android, yeah. Android. What happens if you just go to YouTube, the web page, on the browser on your phone?
It immediately defaults to the mobile version.
It does on iPhone too. Yeah.
And is there a way to, you know, of any way to get around that? Like to actually change it to where
maybe YouTube won't recognize that you're using it from a mobile phone.
On a lot of mobile sites, you can scroll to the bottom and there will be desktop version. And I've seen that on some Google pages, but I don't know that I've ever tried to do that on the YouTube.
Okay. Yeah, I'll try that. I'll see what I can do.
That's a fairly standard practice to have a full desktop button on a mobile page. So I would be I'd kind of be surprised if it didn't have that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll try that. Another thing I wanted to mention that is actually the main reason why I called in today. I'm a Brony.
Oh no!
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really? How did that come about?
How did that happen?
Okay. about a month and a half ago at work, my operations manager told me about it. He told me about, he mentioned the word Brony, and I was like, what is that?
And so curiosity killed the Brony.
And he was just like, yeah, there's a whole society of people out there, just, grown men, completely straight, who just love this show, My Little Pony. And I just was blown away. I was like, what? How is that possible? I had to see what it was.
See, I've avoided that so far.
You're afraid that was going to happen to you. Because apparently people who would say, no, there's no way, get converted. So people that may have more staunch or reserve than you have been swayed to the pony side, and you're worried that's going to happen to you, right, Flicted? You're interested. You're curious. It's happened to this guy.
This is a cautionary tale right here, right?
Yeah, keep going, Levi.
He's brony curious.
You have to keep something in mind. There's nothing really wrong. It does not change you as a person.
It doesn't bring out anything.
I don't think it changes anything. It's just that
it just shows you. It's basically like, oh, this show is not what I expected,
right?
And here's the tricky thing: I didn't even know something like this could exist because it's like I can't even describe.
All right, one question, and we have to go take some other calls. But one question. Are you happy that you found this?
Yes.
Okay. So that's all that matters.
It's not necessarily that I think that it changes anything about you as a person, right? It's just an interest that you would have like any other interest.
But you've got to be careful who you share it with.
That's the thing. It's just that societally, there's a lot of...
Yeah.
It's difficult, right? It's difficult in society. And so you kind of have to embrace it and either fight society against it or
It's really like coming out.
The thing is, I don't understand the conventions because I could never participate in that.
Maybe you should go to BronyCon 2012 and report back.
That's the thing. Each time I imagine myself talking to other bronies, I always think like it's just going to be really awkward.
You couldn't talk into a couple of them right now.
I like that show. Me too.
But a lot of the people that are into it, I think, are also people that are into anime and all that, they make shorts themselves. They do voicing stuff themselves, like they do music themselves.
I'm not into any of that. I used to be into anime. It was a long time ago. I stopped watching.
So there was a seed planted. All right, listen, we got to move on. We're running out of time.
Okay, we appreciate your honesty.
We do appreciate that.
Thanks for coming out, Levi. That's awesome.
All right. Have a good night. Bye. All right. Groovehouse, speed round.
Close to it.
I was pretty sure that somewhere in our listeners there had to be at least one person that was a brony.
You want there to be.
I kind of figured there would be.
Are you going to be honest with us and tell us if you become a brony? Or is this going to be something you're not going to tell us?
I don't know that I could. But I have not watched it yet, so.
Can we trust that to be true? Because you seem genuinely disappointed when you heard that none of us had seen this.
I just...
You asked. You were... There was a little... That was kind of like a little feeler you were putting out to maybe see if there are some kindred spirits.
No, the feeler was to see if any of y'all had watched it and had an opinion, and if you had... And if it had affected you, if it was really good.
Since
and
I've gone out on a limb with the whole Apple thing, I'll watch it. As I know, it's probably not a far leap.
Watch it on your iPad?
I might watch it on my iPad.
I bet you can watch it on your iPad.
I bet you that it looks really good on the new Retina display.
Retina brony.
What if it has like a little bird in, you know? Like there's like some kind of, the higher res, the quicker it gets you, but.
Do you want one of us to check up on you, like, throughout the process, make sure you're okay?
I think I should probably, much like, what was the altered states? I'm going to go into the box, and then whatever you hear, whatever I say, don't open the door. You're going to hear some things. You're going to want to open the door, but don't. I don't know. Maybe I'll go watch it. Maybe I won't.
Now that way you can go watch it, become a brony, come back and go, no, guys, I didn't watch it.
I will tell you this. If I watch it and I like it, I'll tell you. How about that?
Because
you know what? Okay. It's not like I'm not the source, the victim of ridicule anyway. Why not have something really good that you can sink your teeth into?
I'm sure you could like it and not become a brony. You could just watch it and say, oh, that was good, and move on.
For some reason... I feel that to be a true brony, I'd have to have hair. Even like if you were
the manliest brony on YouTube. He didn't have a whole lot of
hair on his head.
He's got a lot of facial hair.
Right, but does he have a little ponytail and what he has left?
I don't think so.
I think that would almost be necessary, but I don't know anything about it. All right. Let's see who's up next, Groovehouse. To change the subject.
Yes. Up next, we are going to take John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, I just have a question regarding, I've got a Dell that was sent to me by Dell to replace my laptop that I had gotten, and they sent me an XPS 15. I've had it about 3 months, but it's just way too heavy, and I carry it around quite a bit, so I want to get something smaller, and I'm thinking about selling this one. So I'm trying to just figure out how I should determine
the value. Well, the way, I sold my iPad today, and the way that I determined the price on that is that I went to see what it sells for new currently, and I also went on to eBay, and unfortunately, regardless, you have to have an account on eBay to see closed auctions, but you can look at what that computer has sold for, and you look at eBay auctions and see where the item is actually sold. You'll see plenty of them that have a price tag on them, but nobody bid on them. But you look to see what they sell for. You don't have to sell on eBay, but it gives you a really good baseline to tell you what something like that's worth and what people are paying for it.
Okay. I will do that tomorrow.
That's what I would do.
Okay.
All right. All right. Thanks for your call.
Sure.
Sure. Right.
B. Rainey, our brainy on IRC.
Brony?
He said he looked up on IMDb to compare Powerpuff Girls and My Little Pony and said that there's about 10 people in common, writers and stuff. But the main person that he saw in common is one of the voice actors. Maybe that's who they're referring to. Because evidently, whoever this is, she embraced the whole, brony thing and has, done stuff to mention them and stuff.
So is she hot or is she, like...
I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know her name.
She sounds sexy on voice.
I don't know.
For only having two legs, she's probably okay.
I wonder if we could get Dwight... maybe we should have a viewing party.
We should play an episode of the next Geek Gathering if we could pull it off, I wonder.
I would watch it, but, I had young children, and so I have actually, seen the original.
2010. See, the original one, all the bronies that I have seen talk about say that was crap. It's this new one that's really, really good. So it's that stuff, it's garbage. Of course, these guys also have My Little Pony figures.
Does it show up on...
And those are old.
Does it show up on Adult Swim?
I have no idea what its origin is or where you can find it or anything.
Where do you watch this My Little Pony?
Alone, hidden away in your basement.
I know there's a channel called Hub that's got a lot of
the Hub.
Shows.
That's what they did say. Yeah. They said the Hub. Yeah. Now, is it available online? Plenty? Plenty? Is there Hub? Is there Brony Visions? Is there
Brony Brony Plus?
Brony BO? Brony Time?
Brony Time! There,
it looks like only the last two episodes are available on Hub World, but I bet you could find this stuff around.
Okay, the animation, yeah, it's very reminiscent. All right, I don't have any problem.
You know, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can't look at this.
I'll tell you who's going to come back next week that we're going to have questions about. If you know, we should probably go watch this together. We can hold hands.
One step at a time.
Brush my tail, brush my... All right. 713-526-5738 may or may not be able to take another couple of calls here. We got about 10 minutes left, so two people in the queue. Who's up next, Groovehouse?
All right, up next, we're going to take Steve.
Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I've got a question about... I've got one of those 8-channel video recorder things. It's like a hardware box. And it says I can put it on the internet to be able to look at it on my iPhone remotely. And I'm wondering what I need to do. I'm kind of like, I can plug in and get the iPhone to work, like another laptop. I can look at it on a laptop if I'm hooked both, you know, my router, hook the laptop into the router by wire,
RJ45,
and the box in by RJ45. I can see it that way. It works.
Are you going to an IP address that's like a 192 or something like that?
Well, he's able to see it on his local network, no problem. But what has to happen if you want to see this from the internet is that you have to assign a static IP address from your local network to the Swan device.
To a specific port.
Mm-hmm. To a specific port. And then you need to be able to... Then you need to know what your the IP address is that's given to your external interface on your internet access so that you can reach that.
Okay. Well, I've got like the standard AT&T. I guess it's dynamic.
Yeah, but it will stay with you for a while.
Well, I've tried that by going to like Who Is and see what my IP address is, and I can't get in that way either.
Well, you can't get in until you forward. You have to do some port forwarding because the IP address that the device has is a private address on your inside. On your inside of your network, only have the one.
You don't want to use Who Is. You want to do go to whatismyip.com is probably the easiest way.
But at any rate, once you do determine what your IP address is, which sounds like you've done, the problem is that when you go to your IP address, it does not know. Your router needs to know how to forward that request onto the video device. So it gets pretty complicated pretty quick. It's not something...
And that's like logging into your DSL modem or your router and setting up port mapping, port forwarding.
But if you look online about with this device and how to use it and how to set it up, I'm sure there's some websites that talk about maybe how to configure it and the things that you're going to have to go through to get it working.
Okay. Yeah, I've read the stuff that this company that made the box, their information is just... I've tried everything they say step by step, you know, multiple times. It's just not working.
Did you check out the Swan View manual for the iPhone? That's what you looked at?
Yes.
Well, they might talk about how to use it once it's been set up correctly. But
yeah, what you need to do is you need to Google for the model of your Wi-Fi router, the model of your router, and then Swan with two N's, and then port forwarding.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead.
So that it probably would work with Dynamic, or I didn't do anything.
It'll work with Dynamic on your external interface. You'll just have to keep remembering finding out what that IP address is. But you need to assign it a static IP address for sure inside your network. So you have to. I'm sorry?
Yeah, okay. So inside my network, it needs a static.
It has to be configured to receive one particular IP address and get that IP address all the time. And then the router has to be set up for port forwarding so that whatever port that the iPhone app is asking for is forwarded from your internet-provided IP address to the IP address of the device inside your network.
Okay.
As I said, it gets complicated really fast. It's not something that we can easily instruct you how to do, but I would, like Barrett mentioned, Google search the name of the device and the words port forwarding, and you'll start to find some discussions about how to do that and what you have to go through to get it set up.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for your call. And we've got one last call in the queue, it looks like.
That is Chris.
Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Yeah, just a couple quick questions. I have a wireless laptop that runs Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, I've been trying to get it to run on wireless N. Whenever I do that, because I have a Linksys router with wireless N, it gets really poor download speed. And I've searched around on it for a while, and the only answer I could find was you just disable the wireless N choice on the laptop. Just go back to G. And that works, and it works much better, but I just didn't know if there's any other answers out there.
What I noticed with my wireless N device is this goes back to where you're talking about getting the better dual-band router. The way that it negotiates the handshake for wireless N between your laptop and the router is improved if you use the better router. So you might see a better, more benefit. What router do you have now?
It's a Linksys dual band, wireless N G.
Which one is it?
I don't know. I'm not up there right now. So
okay. Well, I had the E1200. Which was not dual band, and it was wireless N, and my wireless connections were kind of spotty, but I went to the dual band E6400, and it did a lot better. One of the things you might look at is whether or not you have the router set to mixed mode or not.
Well, I did. Well, not the router, no. I don't think I had the router ready.
You might make the router, take it out of mixed mode and put it into wireless N only if you're only connecting with wireless N devices. And see if that improves.
That should help it actually quite a bit.
Is there any way to boost wireless signal if you got a bad room in your house?
There is. They make wireless boosters. We're out of time, unfortunately, but if you Google search that, there are wireless boosters that you can get. But I found that if you just get a better router or wireless access point in the first place, like Dwight has the E6400N version 2, he gets range all over his house much better than he did.
I have a three-story house and get it on all three floors easily.
All right.
Thanks for your call. All right. Well, that's it. We used up all the calls and all the time. Now, ponies. All right. Well, got to go check out some YouTube videos on my YouTube app.
We're all going to tell everyone else, right, if we come back ponies. Sure.
This is like one of those deals like where you all say, we're all going to agree, right? And then, and then only one person comes back and says, okay, well, let's time to admit. And everybody goes, are you kidding? Did you really? Oh, my God, I'm quitting the show. Yeah, I don't trust any of you. But I'll watch. If I get around to watch it, I'll watch it and I'll tell you. I mean, I already said I like the Powerpuff Girls, so I'm on the line. Thanks for tuning in. This is Technology Bites. My Little Pony episode, episode one in a series of upcoming My Little Pony episodes. Uh-oh. We thank you for tuning in tonight here to Technology Bites. We do appreciate it. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he
Groovehouse.
Stick around for more great programming here, Vegan World Radio locally, and check your listings if you're listening outside the KPFT area.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and at the same time take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, radio for peace.
Join Save Texas Schools in Austin on March 24th from 11 to 2 p.m. and let the politicians in Austin know that Texans support public education. This group will be rallying at the Capitol that day to demonstrate to legislators that funding